Okay, Erev Tov, good evening. I'm beginning to feel the winter is kicking in today, but let's hope we can warm up a little bit before it really starts. We just have sort of advanced notice that we have essentially another 2 weeks. We've got next week, and then Mirtz Hashem, the first Monday in December, which I think is Hanukkah, if I'm not mistaken. That will be our last year for this part of the season. The week after that I'm moving, so I can't really turn up on that day. It's Hashem to be continued after the college vacation, which is going to be round about the end of January, 25th, 26th, something like that, when, please God, we'll start Sefer Nehemiah, and we'll see how we go. You know, we've made good headway on Sefer Ezra, so I'm excited that we, by the end of the year, we will have got through Ezra and Nehemiah with all of the sort of comments that we've made. Obviously, I want to dedicate this shiur. It's gave me a bit of a chill. Actually, no, we'd say in plural, chills, to think that the young man who was murdered, cold blood by the Palestinians, his name was Ezra Schwartz, Zichro Livracha, who... I've been hearing a little bit about him because a lot of the students that I'm connected with in Colombia knew him. They came from, the one girl emailed me today that she's not turning up to college this week in YU because she went to the Levi yesterday and she was so upset about what happened. She's staying home for the rest of the week. You know, I can understand that. So she got my sympathy vote. But the reality is that this is really quite a shocking piece of news, it really was. And Yom Chun is the one, yes,
I saw. My daughter-in-law gave birth on that day.
Oh, really?
Baby stuff.
And babies, yeah. Ach, it's...
And the kids in yeshivas were watching it over the internet.
Yeah, it was live. There was a link.
There were hundreds, if not thousands, of teenagers watching.
Watching the whole thing, I know. And one of the moving Hespedim yesterday was... Got Yudin, who really was crying the whole way through. If you saw it, he's just, because he's running the yeshiva program, which this young man was attending. Oh, it's very, very difficult, and I just hope that the family can find some comfort somewhere, because the news is still too hard to deal with. Together with, also, I think we should dedicate the share, obviously, in memory of the other people who were also in that particular pigua. The teacher, his name was Rabbi Dan, Dalad Nun. I never knew him, but it turns out that my nephew, he was his teacher in Efrat. He was a very popular teacher in the high school in Efrat. Also was a teacher in some seminary programs. Seems to have been also very, very, how do you say in Ivrit? You know, you say more than Mukhubat, someone who was so respected and above that. And, you know, there is a plan. I can't explain it to you. I don't understand it. I don't even want to try and sort of get into the philosophical discussion about it. But going through this process, Chavlei Mashiach, is really incredibly, incredibly difficult. And I just hope that, as Scott Yudin said yesterday, this is it. Die, enough. We've suffered enough. And let's you know, God bring the Mashiach as soon as possible. So again, dedicating the Shia in their memory. Also, I know Abe Weintraub probably won't be here, but I want to also mention his passing of his mother-in-law, Susie's mother, who also passed away yesterday, and Levi was today. Also, her neshama should have an aliyah, and our learning should also be le'ilui nishmata. We're looking at chapter 8, Perek Chet of Sefer Ezra. And what we're going to do, the first part of the chapter, till about Pasuk Tedvav, is literally, as I said last week, a list of names. What happens is, last week we read about Ezra's Aliyah, right? He's coming to Eretz Yisrael and all the excitement, and in the end he makes this fantastic tefillah, after he hands over the what is called Rishayon, the permission, which is given by Artaxerxes, Artaxerxes, who Rashi says is in fact Darius, gives permission for the Jews to start the Avodah Space of Mikdash. In other words, to get together all the necessary items that is needed in order to begin the continual service, which korbanot, sacrifice, etc., in the temple. And all of that was established last week. What we see in chapter 8 is a kind of review. The review of who came with Ezra, a bit more information, and a bit more about the journey. Okay, because there's an interesting fact. And the interesting fact is that Ezra realizes that while he's gathering all the people together to come back to Eretz Israel, there's one group that doesn't turn up. All right, you know, it's like the a conscription, right? So all the 19-year-olds didn't turn up. What happened? Wait a minute. I've got 18-year-olds, I've got 20. What happened to the 19-year-olds? So in this case, the Levim didn't turn up. And the question, which is very intriguing, is why not? So there's a very wonderful midrash, which we'll see in due course. And I'm going to speculate a little bit. Right? I'm going to sort of put something which is not so positive, because you'll see that Ezra actually made a knas. He actually fined them for not coming. He made a knas against them in terms of trumas, that in the second bayit, during that temple period, they were very much restricted in what they were entitled to get from the tzibur. Normally it's 10% and masorishon and all the things that we understand as normal, magileh, and what they normally receive. And in this case, Ezra made a limitation. He imposed a restriction on them as a kind of reaction to the fact that they didn't come back willingly. Because without Levim, you can't really do the temple thing. They've got to play instruments, they've got to sing. You know, you're missing your chazonim. Or certainly you're missing your shlichei tzibur, or whatever they were. Yeah.
The ones who get trum and maaser are the ones in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
There's no trum and maaser outside.
Yeah.
So the ones in Eretz Yisrael, they came. What do you want from them?
The trouble is that, it was an imposition on the ones who... I suppose what you'll see, you're right. The ones who came should get it, whatever happened. It seems to be that what he had to do was to entice them to come. He had to scurry around to bring them. Right? In other words, the ones that came did not come willingly. So because they didn't come willingly, he made a knas. You'll see there's a quote here which I'll share. I think it's taken from the Gemara, if I'm not mistaken. The Gemara talks about it. He brings here from Yevamos 86, Pei Vav Amud Beis, or Midrash Ezra. Then we'll come to that, and we'll talk about that in a bit more. Because it's kind of an interesting thing. So again, we can speculate why they didn't want to come back. We'll come to that. So have a look at this chapter, Perek Chet. I don't know what page it is in the blue book. 132. As I said, Baruch Hashem, I think we're making good headway here through this Sefer. I think it's one of those things that, you know, you can talk about. You know, it's one of those talking points of what you're learning. Not many people will be able to sort of tell you that they've learned through Sefer Ezra. So I think it's really something exciting. So look at this. Ve'ela Rashi Avoteihem v'hit yachasam. Again, what we're trying to do here in this list of people that Ezra is bringing, this is not the original, and this is now a new aliyah. We'll call it Aliyah Bet, or whatever you want to call it, the names of the people and their yichus. We're trying to make sure that they are bona fide in terms of their Jewishness. Ho'olim imi, so the ones that came with me, says Ezra, b'malchuta tachshasa melech ha'bavel, from the kingdom of, they gathered together with me in the kingdom of Artaxerxes, in Babylon. And he goes through a whole list, and I'll just read this through very quickly. M'nei Pinchas Geshem, M'nei Yitamar, Daniel. Are these the people that we know? Seemingly not, but they've all got very similar names. Bibnei David Chatush, Bibnei Shechanya, Bibnei Parosh, Zechariah, Vimo, Hityaches, the Zechariah, Me'av V'chamishim. So he says that on the name Zechariah, there are accounted for another 150 males who are miuchosim. They are people that we know the yichus, we know who they are. And he goes through all these kind of families. Bibnei Pachad Moav, there's a family called Pachad Moav. El, and again, some of these names are impossible to pronounce. El Yehoenai, Ben Zeracha, Vimo, Matayim, Azcharim. He had 200 males with him that they could certify. Bibnei Shechanya, Ben Yachaziel, Vimo, Shalosh, Miot, Azcharim. He goes up. You can see he's going up in number. He has 300. Bibnei Adin, Eved Bar Ben Yonatan, this Adin, who is and another one called Eved ben Yonatan, v'imo 50 zecharim, he only had 50 zecharim, 50 males. All right, chapter 8, verse 7. V'bnei Elam Yishaya ben Atalia, and it's so interesting how these names repeat themselves. You know, from the Bayit Rishon, Atalia was not one of the heroes. This is, I presume, he uses as a male name, but Atalia was the queen, the daughter of Jezebel, of Izebel, originally. V'imo shivim azcharim, he had 70 males coming with him. U'b'nei Shefatya Zavadya ben Michael, v'imo shmonim zecharim. So you're going to have to do, like, you know, on a computer, you can do on a calculator, you can do all the calculations here. V'b'nei Yoav Avadya ben Yichiel, v'imo matay mishmona asar zecharim. That's an interesting number, 218. Okay, always wondered about the numbering systems which you find in the Torah, in Sefer Bamidbar. You always have the numbers which seem to be all round numbers. 74,250. It's never 253. So you say to yourself, okay, so the Torah is rounding off the numbers. But when they do that swap between the Levim and the Bukharim, that is the exact number. So there's a whole discussion about whether the numbers are, in fact, was a nace, that the numbers were round numbers. Not that they were rounded off, but they actually were those numbers. And here also you can argue these numbers which are mentioned here is 100, 200, here is 218. Right? Shmonasa, Zacharim, Matayim Shmonasa. So again, these numbers maybe were exact numbers. It's a sign, I remember, I think the Kliyoka says it there, over there, the sign of Shlemus. A sign of completeness of Am Yisrael, that the numbering of the people always was not by chance a round number, but it really signified a sense of completeness, a sense of perfection. Which I just throw that out there because it's an interesting thing to look at in Sefer Bamidbar. So again, here you've got kind of an interesting number which is thrown in. And again, look what we go back to. B'nei Shlomit ben Yosifya v'imo me'av shishim zecharim. Now we're back to round numbers again, 160. U'b'nei Beivai Zechariah ben Beivai v'imo esrim ashmona. This one is not a, different number, 28. Ubnei Azgad, Yochanan ben Akatan. These are all names of the heads of these families. Bimo Mea Vasara, Zacharim, 110. Minei Adonikam Acharonim. These seem to be the last of the group that he was referring to. Ve'ele Shmotam Elipelet Yiel Shmaya V'mahem Shishim Zacharim. They had 60 males that came with them. Ubenei, Bigvai, Utai, Zabud. Again, all these various names, some of which I can't imagine anyone would use these names today. Vimahem, Shivim, Azacharim. Okay, 70 males. And that's the whole group. This is the last group. And Ezra brings all of these people together. You know, obviously, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of people. 1386. You counted it up. Excellent. 1600, just the men. So we're talking, and then you add the family together. It's not a lot. This is really not a lot. I was going to say, not a lot. Now here comes the interesting observation. He says, I gathered all these people together, El Nahar Haba El Ahava, in the river which leads to Ahava. Now some say, where is this river? And there's a whole discussion in the Mephoreshim, and they say it's probably the river Tigris. Chidekel, I think it's called in Hebrew. If you think back to Garden of Eden, they had all these different rivers mentioned there, which we learnt in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis. So the place where they all flowed to was a place called Ahava, right? Which is spelled with a Vav, not the way we spell Ahava in Hebrew. V'nachanesham yamim shlosha, we were there for 3 days. V'avina ba'am v'kohanim, I understood that the people had come and the priests, u'b'nei Levi lo matzati sham, but no Levites. How interesting. All right? And there is a very amazing Gemara, and I'll just read it to you here. I'm sorry I didn't manage to photocopy this, but I'll read it out to you. He says like this, the Gemara in Yevamos says that the failure of the Levites to migrate from Babylon with Ezra, he fined them, those who, in other words, what we said before, those eventually did come, but they came because he scurried around trying to find them. So he made a knas on them. He made a fine. What was the fine? Depriving them of their tithes, either completely or by giving the priests equal rights with the Levim. So instead of the priests getting 2% usually, and the Levim getting 10%, presumably they split down the middle. All right. So the 12, maybe they got 6% each. I don't know how it worked, but something like that. And however, other sources say that there were Levites with Ezra, but there were none capable of playing the harp. In other words, what happened was that the Levites that came back, the Levim, were not able to play. The question is why? And here comes an unbelievable midrash. I can't make this up. It says the following. It says that when they traveled down to Bavel, it says they left their harps on the willow trees, Arnaros Bavel. All right, some of you may say that before the benching, in that those who have the minhag to do so during the week. And it says that what happened was that the tormentors were asking the Jews to sing a song of Zion. All right, Shir Lanu Shir Tzion. And they said, how long can we sing this song on a foreign soil? You know, they just translated it into English, but Kuf Lamed Zion, I think it is. Psalm 137, if I'm not mistaken. So what does it say there on that particular Tehillim? It brings the following midrash, that Nebuchadnezzar asked the Levim to play for him. He decided that, you know what, I'm getting all of these incredible musicians turning up. It's like having the Royal Philharmonic, whichever one it is, the Boston or the New York or the London, whatever, all coming together, and I want to have some music. You know, as Nebuchadnezzar was obviously into his own sort of, his own glory. And having these people playing for him was something that, you know, he really wanted. And they were adamant that they weren't going to do this. Adamant. They said, they called him a dwarf. They said, this man, he probably was very short. Okay, they didn't want to play for him. Obviously, they were derogatory towards him. So what did they do? And this is pretty gory. It says they decided to maim themselves. So they all bit their thumbs in such a way that the thumb was maimed. I don't know what that means, whether they bit the whole top off or something. I don't know how they did it. All right, but it says that they couldn't play. Their thumbs were maimed and they couldn't pluck the strings, which they had to, on the instruments in order to play for Nebuchadnezzar. They refused. And of course, if you say that, then obviously this is an act of tremendous mesirat nefesh. They tried to get out of playing for Nebuchadnezzar. But Ezra was tough on them. Ezra, and this is what I find so incredible, and Rashi brings this in Kiddushin, that Ezra fined them because the Levites who had not maimed themselves did not accompany him to Eretz Yisrael. In other words, the ones who were balmum, they were maimed, they the ones who went with. And the ones who didn't maim themselves, the ones who stayed behind, were the ones who could play. What did they do when Nebuchadnezzar came after them? They ran away. They disappeared. They went into hiding. So those Levim, the ones who hid from Nebuchadnezzar but didn't go out of their way to make sure they couldn't play for him in the way that the other guys did, they're the ones that eventually Ezra managed to bring back, but he made it very clear that he was not very happy with the way that they had conducted themselves, and he made a fine on them. They weren't going to get their particular portion the way that they normally would. It's fascinating. And he brings here that from Midrash Ezra, which I haven't got hold of. I should really try and get hold of that. Midrash Ezra, who says that the Levim, they ran away from Nebuchadnezzar to conceal their identity, and in case he asked them to play. So when Ezra embarked on the journey to Jerusalem, he could not find any Levim who were fit to play until he searched for them. So he had to go looking for Levim. So again, the question what you're trying to answer is, why did Levim not come back? And the suggestion is that they ran away, or that they were the ones that came back were the ones that were maimed, and they weren't able to play the instruments which they would be required to play. So Ezra realized, wow, we got a problem. I'm bringing back a whole bunch of Levim. I'm not able to play the music. What am I going to do? So then he had to start looking, as you'll see, for other Levim. It could be, and again, I'm just going to suggest, because there's another option here which says to me, a possibility that, you know what, the Levim maybe decided, after they'd been 70 years in exile, that, you know, life was good down there. What happens to the Levi when he comes back to Eretz Yisrael? He has to live in certain cities. His life is very defined. It's very limited. He has to be involved with the Mikdash. You know, there's no sort of freedom of expression, freedom of leading a life where he wanted to. It could very well be they became affluent. Who knows? And all of this, leaving all of that behind to come back to Eretz Yisrael, maybe they just turned around and said, no, we're not going. All right, and this again, I've spoken about this before. This is, to me, such a tremendous kind of warning to us that in the end of the day, when the time comes for us to turn around and say, well, we're not going because, well, we've got our houses here in Bergen County or in LA or wherever we are, in London or in Tokyo, as they say, whatever it may be, probably not in Tokyo, but whatever. And you know what it is, you know, it's hard to leave all this property behind. And there's a lot to say. This week's parsha is so interesting. When it talks about, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's this week or is it next week, I don't remember now, when Yaakov Avinu goes back for the Pachim Ketanim, I think it's this week's parsha. And there's a whole a comment there about the fact that Asatzmo Kegeshe, it says he made himself like a bridge in order to take the to cross one of the rivers so that the animals could he could sort of lift them across from one side to the other. And the Eimah Barim Smecha of Teichdal, this sefer that we've quoted a number of times, this incredible man who died during the Shoah, who bemoaned the fact that people became so anti-Zionist, when in fact he saw that, not even talk about Zionism, just talking about connecting to Eretz Israel. One of the things he says about Yaakov Avinu is, why was he so successful to bring his property into Eretz Israel? It's because he always kept one foot in Eretz Israel. He never, that's, he says, is the symbolism of one foot on one side of the river, probably a brook or whatever it was, and one foot on the other side. It wasn't that physically only he was standing like that, but he kept a foot in Eretz Israel. He always kept connected. His mind was among Eretz Israel. Everything about it was to do with Israel. And therefore, because he was connected, he succeeded in bringing his property back. And what Rav Teichdal writes about, he said, one of the most shocking things of what's happening to the Jews is not just the loss of life, which is in itself was something that I don't even think he realized how bad it was getting, but it was also about the loss of property. Every piece of Jewish property in Hungary, in Poland, in Germany was confiscated by the enemy. And they came out with nothing. And the ones who only managed to bring things out before, if they left in good enough time before the war, they came to Eretz Yisrael, they came wherever they came out from that particular situation. Rav Teichdal writes about this. And he says, our Hatzlocha is from our connection to Eretz Yisrael. And we heard a story a few weeks ago, Dachi Noam, he's not here, but Lenny Goldsmith talked about a deal that he did in Israel, which he bought something which he thought was not going to make any money on it for him, and it became very successful. He talks about that a lot, because it's a whole story. I don't remember all the details. You remember? And it was diamonds, right?
And the international buyers decided they like these low-quality Israeli diamonds more than the high-quality.
More than the high-quality. And again, connection to Eretz Israel.
And
I can't...
He doesn't explain it except by saying it was Israeli.
Yeah, I can't explain it. I do know we were there in the summer. We met a guy who just come back after spending, I think, 10 or 12 years in America. And he had a stall somewhere, one of the shopping centers. And he was saying he can't believe how incredibly, how he was succeeding there in a way that he never succeeded in Chutz La'aretz. He said, I lived in America, he had whatever work that he was doing, but when he was working in that particular, and looked very limited what he was doing, he felt that he was more successful, certainly more fulfilled. Very interesting character that we bumped into at one, I think it was in Malchut, if I'm not mistaken. So this connection to Eretz Israel, and once that connection is there, then that's where, the Jews, it's a lifeline. It's our connection to life, it's our connection to who we are. I just mentioned to Harold before, there's a phenomenal comment this week, talking about Eretz Yisrael. We're going to get a bit Zionistic this evening, but no apologies. The question of Yaakov coming back to Eretz Yisrael, he was very worried about meeting Esau, right? The whole thing at the beginning, Vayishla. So he sends messengers to Esau, he's worried about it. He says that he was very afraid. He was very perturbed about the whole thing. And the question is, what is he afraid of? So the Gemara asks the question. In fact, the Gemara phrases it as a contradiction, because last week he was promised, God says, I will guard you, Shmarticha, and I'll bring you back. And this week he's afraid. So, make up your mind. Either you trust in Hashem or you don't. And that's a whole discussion by itself. But what Yaakov seems to have been afraid of, says one of the commentaries, Dar Zakenin, of Bali Tosus, who seems, we always associate that with the grandchildren of Rashi and beyond, they say that he was afraid that Esau has spent those 20 years, Yaakov was outside Eretz Israel, Esau was in Israel. And Esau had the zechut, whatever it means, and I can't, don't want to go into that now, but whatever the zechut was of being in Israel when Yaakov was outside Israel. And that's Esau. What is Esau doing in Israel? Is he a Shomer Torah mitzvahs in Israel? No. But the reality of it is, being in Eretz Yisrael for Esau was a bigger merit, or enough of a merit that Yaakov was worried. That if Esau is coming with his men, and maybe has negative intentions towards Yaakov, he may succeed. So there's something about being connected to Eretz Yisrael, which even for the, you know, so the people who are not necessarily living on a high spiritual level, they're given a you know, some sort of, I don't know what the word is, you know, an elevation, an aliyah, literally. And of course, referring to Rav Kook and what Rav Kook wrote about the Chalutzim, who everybody, certainly in the Haredi world, was very upset about, that so many people are coming to Israel and not observing mitzvot in Israel. And Rav Kook's answer was, but they are observing. The greatest mitzvah that they can do is building Eretz Yisrael, Binyan Haaretz. And he was, he became the champion, as it were, of many groups. And there's a lot of interesting stuff that went on in those days, and probably still continues the discussion to this day. You know, something about the place, there's no question about that. There is something about it. I think going back to the B'nai Levi, this is something which I wanted to mention. The fact that B'nai Levi were in this situation where they either chose to come back, the ones who really could not help in terms of playing in the Beit HaMikdash, and that's why Ezra panicked, but he had to go and get some Levim who could play. They didn't want to come back. And of course, obviously the question is, why not? This is what we've been talking about for the last few minutes. And the other suggestion is that they ran away because Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to play for him. And rather than play for Nebuchadnezzar, they decided to hide. And those guys, of course, when Ezra was trying to get people together to go back, he did not manage to get hold of them so easily. So he went looking for them. This is what it says in the next Pasuk Ted Zayin. So again, a bit of an interesting kind of background here to what's going on. So Ted Zayin, Veshlecha l'Eliezer, l'Ariel, l'Shmaya, l'El-Natan, l'Yeriv, u'le'El-Natan, u'le'Natan. These are all, you know, the sort of repetitions of names for different people. U'le'Natan, l'Zachariah, l'Meshulam, Rashim. These are the heads of these particular families. U'le'Yoyariv, u'le'El-Natan, Mevinim. And to those two guys who are always recognized as being Mevinim. Those guys who really were wise were very clever men. But avatzeh, it's interesting, atzaveh, right? The word is, the vav is switched around here. Avatzeh otam al Ido arosh, and I commanded them to go to Ido. Seems to have been a man who was one of the main Levim at the time. As Rashi points, Ibn Ezra points out here, Rosh, and he was in, what is it called? Kasifia. He was in a place called Kasifia, which was in Babylon, Hamakom, in that place. Vasiva Bafiem Devarim Ledaber Elido. And I told these men what to say to Ido, Achiv, and also to Achiv. Most of the Mephoroshim say this is another name. Some say that it's referring to the brothers of Ido or something of that equivalent. Hanit. Again, this is a Kri Ketiv. Hanetinim b'Kasifia. All of those people who were living in this place called Kasifia, Makom, Lavi, Lano, Mesharatin, Lebeit Elokein. We need people to work in the temple. So go and tell him, send your men. We've got to have Leviim to come back. Ve'yaviu lanu, kiyad Elokeinu, atova aleinu. And you can see the emunah, fantastic emunah of Ezra. All right, that, you know, he's preparing, he's talking about the fact that, you know, without God's help, this would not have happened. All the time, you know, the Befi, as they say with Yaakov Avinu, you know, that he had the name of God in his mouth, Shigura Befi. And because Shigura Befi, that's why Yitzchak had a question mark. Is this Yaakov, is it Esau? It can't be Esau because he's talking about God the whole time. So that was the whole story with the Brachot. And here also, you know, with Ezra, the language of Ezra is always full of recognition of what Hashem is doing for him. And he says, Giyad Elokeinu Tova Aleinu, Ish Secham Ibnei Machli, we had a man of intellect from the sons of Machli, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael, Shrevio Banav, V'echav Shmonasa, and there was 18 people. Again, not many people. This is not a massive return of Levim to Eretz Yisrael. He goes with a few more people. Vet Chashavya v'ito Yeshaya b'nei Merari. Obviously, Merari is a name after the original Merari, I assume, of the original Levim in the time of Moshe. Echav u'b'neiem Esrim, another 20 people. U'mina netinim shenatan David hasarim lavodat ha'Levim. And from those netinim who were converts at the time of David, who were given over to work for the Levim, when the Tinim of time Vesrim, 220, Kulam Nikvu B'Shemot also, because again, you need the people not only for the Levim, but people to work for them as well. While they're working in the Beit HaMikdash, they obviously had people working whatever work had to be done in the home and beyond. And at this point, says Ezra, I made a fast day. We were by this river, Ahava, which is still outside Eretz Israel. We were fasting before God. We were asking for that our journey would be safe. Wow. And this again is so interesting. One of the great books to read, a number of books to read, is the these translations of original manifests of the journeys of. The one that is fascinating is the Bar Tanura. The Bar Tanura, who we know from the commentary on the Mishnah, he went to Eretz Israel in the late, I think, 1400s, but he went through Europe. And again, I think it's been translated, all the different communities that he visited, the fact that he, you know, what he went through, what he actually experienced in different places, absolutely amazing. Chaim David Azulai, the Chida, very famous. Also, not only did he have time to write Svarim on Shulchan Aruch, Birkei Yosef, which is a classic, but he also managed to travel around and go from community to community, and he wrote about it. And again, another very, very interesting person. I always tell a story. I had a student, this must be 35 years ago, who came into my, it was Bar Mitzvah class, or it was pre-Bar Mitzvah class, and he sat down, so I said, okay, what's your name? So he said, David Azulai. I said, how do you spell that? A-Z-U-L-A-I. I said, Azulai? I said, do you realize who you're descended? He said, yeah, my dad, he was not observant. He says, my father told me that we're descended from some great rabbi, but I don't know who it is. I said, listen, I'm going to lend you a book, because I got hold of this, because they already had the translation of the part of the travels of the Chidah. And I said, read this book, find out who your great-great-great-great-grandfather really was. It will blow your mind. All right, and this was an interesting experience that somebody would come out like that. Yeah.
Do you pronounce name also Azulai?
No, maybe Azulai, but usually Azulai.
There's a guy Azulai who's a painter.
Yeah, and there may also be descendants.
He does the micro. He used to do the micro. You've seen those pictures, you know,
With the small words, yeah, with the small lettering. Yeah, it may be. Why they're called Azulai? Because it's from the pasuk Isha, Zona, V'chalala, Lo Yikachu, right? Azulai. So they were Kohenim. They had a tradition of being Kohenim. So that's the pasuk talking about, one of the pasukim talking about the priests. So whichever way you look at it, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So again, you know, I also ran into, in Israel many years ago, a woman whose name was Isilis. So who is she? And she knew who she was descended from, the Ramah. Ramosha Isilis was the famous commentary on Shulchan Aruch, right? For the Ashkenazim, there's the Mechaber, Rabbi Joseph Kara for the Svarnit, and the Ramah for the Ashkenazim. And this woman was a direct line from the Ramah. I mean, again, you know, you meet sometimes, you hear these names and of people, and if you just push a little bit, you find out some interesting connections. So something to be aware of. All right, Chafbet. So what's his fast? And it's interesting, when he was traveling from Bavel to Eretz Israel, Daniel Artaxerxes, or wherever he was, offered to give him some sort of military protection. Right, you send some soldiers with. Ezra said no. He said, "This is, we're going b'shem Hashem. We're going in the name of the God of Israel, and the God of Israel will protect us." But he got to a certain point, and he began to realize, you know, maybe we just need to daven a bit more for that. All right, it's not something I can assume is going to happen. We have to make a tefillah. So look what he did, Kafbet, and he says, "Ki boshti." He says, "I was ashamed." Lishol min amelech chel uprashim, because I would have to ask for protection, soldiers and riders to help us. Lozreinu moye badartas, to help us against the enemy that we may meet on the way. As you said, we're not talking about a lot of people. Maybe 2,000 people are traveling, all right? And, you know, they're very vulnerable targets, especially they're probably coming with a lot of money, a lot of gold and silver and whatever. This is a problem. Ki omarnu lemelech lemob, and we said to the king, Yad Elokeinu akom avakshav letova. The hand of our God is anyone who seeks Him for good. In other words, anyone who's doing things in the name of God is protected. V'uzov yapar kol ozvav, and those who go away from Him stir up the anger of God. So, in other words, we are we said to the king, we don't need protection. Hashem Yazor, as they say in modern Hebrew. Yeah.
Only the Scharim went in the first time.
Only the Scharim are mentioned because that's the Yichus. And then I'm assuming that they obviously brought their family as well. But there's not that many.
No, but I say when they came, the first initial...
Oh, before that, the early one.
No.
This one, this is only Scharim. Yeah, but again, I guess the family came with. I mean, they wouldn't come by themselves. They had to bring the Nashim and
Tab. But from the road.
The way it's mentioned is...
When you were like men's only, it's...
It would say so. Yeah, I think the Scharim here is more the idea of the fact, finding out who they really are. The Yichus. Right, that they're the ones who were guaranteed, as far as they knew, they could trace back their lineage right back to the earliest days. Everybody else, it was a problem. That's what we said last week. Ezra took with, although it doesn't say so here, but the Rav Kahati brought this, that the Gemara says that he also brought with a lot of the families that had already mu'arav, right? They'd assimilated, and he wanted to bring them to Eretz Israel to bring them back to Yiddishkeit, bring them back to being Jewish. And that's going to be next chapter. We're actually going to see a bit more about that. But listen to this, such an interesting story. Kaf Gimel. He says, V'natzuma, we fasted, and Avaksham Elokeinu Azot, and we begged God, V'yater Lanu, and God listened to us. And of course the rabbis say, How do you know? How do you know that Hashem heard your prayer? So one of the rabbis says, that from the famous Gemara. Gemara says, I think it was Chanina. Who is it? Chanina ben Dosa. He brings it. Chanina ben Dosa, Gemara in Brochus, if I'm not mistaken, who says that how did he know that his tefillah was accepted? It says shugurah b'fi, when the tefillah used to flow. He used to feel that, you know, he could daven without any impediment, without any restriction. It kind of, you know, it just was like I don't know how to describe it. You know, it just was without limit. It was without limitation, without hesitation. And the suggestion is that Ezra had the same ability. That by saying the tefillot, and with being able to say these tefillot without interruption, you know, they would flow from the heart, they would come from the soul, as it were, he realized that these tefillot were being answered. Which again is a very beautiful pshat in this particular thing. The idea of, you know, knowing when your prayers are accepted, having some inkling about that. It's a challenging concept. Kafdala. So let's see what he did. Vavdila misarei ha-kohanim, shnei masar. I also now separated 12 of the heads of the kohanim, l'sherevya, chashavya, and these two gentlemen, v'imoy me'achem asara, those two plus 10 of their brothers. These are now being appointed to divide up all of the gold and silver which they needed to bring in order to make this special kelim. Right? If you go to the museum in Yerushalayim today of the Muzen HaMikdash, Rabbi Richman, go and say hello to him, he's a wonderful man, and he will show you what they've reproduced. Some of those kelim are ready to go. It's breathtaking. It really is something to see. Also, the paintings there, the recreations of what was going on in the Mikdash is really very special. So he says, Kafe, Esh Kala Lahem. So how much did I weigh out for them? The gold, Kesev, Zahav, the silver, the gold, Veta Kelim, Trumat Beit Elokeinu, for the donation, for the offering for the house of God, Echerima HaMelech V'Yoatzav V'Sarat. And these are amounts which had been given from the king and from all of the officers. Remember that the Persian kings were encouraging this. V'chol Yisrael nimtzaim, and also all of Israel. So the donations were very substantial. V'eshkalo al yadam kesanim, and he's accounting for every, as you say in Ivrit, every grush. This again, this is from Moshe Rabbeinu, Parsha Pekudei. Moshe Rabbeinu was set the standard. You know that if you're a leader of the Jewish people, that's why there's always going to be two gaboyim. Right, one gabbai is not enough. Two gabbaim have to be there because one has to be in charge of the other, as it were. You've got to keep watching each other as well as working for the community. So one person to be in charge of the money, not a good situation. And here again, every grush is accounted for. So he says, Veshkalal Yadam Kesev Kikarim, 650 talents of silver, whatever a talent was, an amount, Ukle Kesev Me'al Kikarim, Zahav Me'akika. So silver there was 100 talents, and gold also 100 talents. V'kaforei Zaham Esrim There were 20 bowls of gold. Obviously, they already came. They brought these bowls with them. La adar konim aleph, and there were each one was made of 1,000 adar konim, which was again a weight of gold. Uklei nechoshet, and there was brass vessels mutzav tova, who also were fine. In this case, it was copper, wasn't gold. Shenayim, there were two of these copper vessels. Chamudot kezahav. They were as precious as gold. So obviously, again, you know, they were very, they'd already got themselves ready to bring these kelim with. And Ezra said to them, this is beautiful. Again, imagine this march going to Eretz Yisrael. All I can think of, you know, the pictures you see of the people coming to Eretz Yisrael in the 50s, the Yemenites, right? They walked across the desert and you know, they knew the Tanakh. And they must have been thinking of this when they were walking. And you know, you hear stories from people who came from different Arab countries. They didn't come on the planes. They walked. They went by foot with very little possession. You know, everything, as I said, was usually taken away from them. So all of this must have been in their minds, hearing what Ezra had said to the people that were coming back at the second bite as they were returning to Eretz Yisrael in the beginning of the state. V'omra lehem, Atem Kodesh Lashem. Ezra said to them, you are holy to the Lord, meaning the people. Vakelim Kodesh. And the vessels are holy. Alright? Obviously, this is a way of giving them chizam. Vakesev Azahav Nadaval Hashem. All of this gold and silver is a donation to God. Elokei Avotichem, the God of your fathers. Shikadu Vashimaru. This is a phrase that you come across in the Gemara in a number of places. It says to be quick. And God, ad tishkulu livnei sarei konim alviim, v'sarei avod Yisrael v'yushalayim lishchot beit Hashem. In other words, get this gold and silver to Jerusalem as soon as possible because of its value and it's needed over there. Pasuk Lamed. V'kiblu ha-konim alviim mishkal ha-kesev ha-zahav ha-kelim. And they became responsible for all of this gold and silver and all the vessels. L'avi yushalayim l'beit ha-lokeinu, to bring it to Jerusalem. So again, this is such a, you know, the mind's eye is full of this image of the people, you know, going up to Yerushalayim. This is very special. V'nisam in Ahar Ahava. Now they decided they left this place, the river Ahava, b'shnei masal l'chodesh Rishon. This was the 12th of Nisan. And again, the rabbis point out the connection to Pesach. This was already their Yitziat Mitzrayim. They're not leaving Egypt in the sense, but they're leaving Persia, Babylon, and it's at the same time as the original Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the 12th of Nisan, Lalechad Yerushalayim, to go to Jerusalem. V'yad Elokeinu haita aleinu v'yatzilenu mikaf oyev v'orev al haderech. And he says that we were saved from enemies. Presumably people tried to attack them, and nobody was injured, nobody was affected. Or maybe nobody tried to attack them. But, you know, the way he says it, we were saved from every enemy. Maybe they, you know, we just don't know. We're not told. So your point's a good point. I wish we could say that today. Yeah.
Did they travel on Pesach?
And again, did they stop over Pesach? One assumes for Yontov they would have stopped, yeah. But again, one day, I mean, Chol HaMoed, there's halachas about this, right? Aliyah l'Eretz Yisrael, even to go on Shabbos. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch, I think, the whole thing of being on the boat. Normally, I don't remember, there's a whole sif in Shulchan Aruch, I remember, in the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, about traveling even on Shabbos for this particular purpose. So again, I don't know. Well, I would assume that they would stop for Pesach. I mean, you know, you got to do Seder, you got to do Matzah. Not quite sure how they would have done. They would have taken all those provisions with them. It's very quiet about that. Doesn't really talk about that in detail. Lamabet, Manavo Yerushalayim, and eventually we got to Jerusalem. We've already told this before. As I said, this was kind of going over those events again with different pieces of information. Vaneshev Sham Yabim Shlosha. Initially we were there for 3 days, I suppose just to gather and to sort of recover from the journey. Ubayom Aravi Nishkal HaKesev HaZahav HaKelim, and we couldn't wait. The fourth day we took all of these vessels, the gold, the silver, the Beit HaLokeinu, Al Yad Meremot Ben Uri HaKohen. We took it to the Kohen at the time, it was called Meremot. V'imo Elazar Ben Pinchas, and there was Elazar Ben Pinchas also there. V'imoim Yozavad Ben Yeshua, V'Nodaya Ben Binui HaLevim, and we also had Levim there. So obviously, by this time, at the time they got there, there were Levim, obviously, in situ, but again, Ezra was bringing more Levim, one assumes, and that whole story that we spoke about before. But Mispar, but Mishkal, like on, everything was weighed out. Everything was counted. You know, they didn't. They were very countable for everything. They wrote everything down. Which again is like, you know, this is real accountancy 101. In case you were looking for those who are sort of into accounting, here it is. It's in Tanakh. Habayim me'ashvi b'nei agola. And those who came back from captivity, what did they do in order to express their joy? You know, nowadays you would say they were bench gomel. In those days, it was their gomel to God. Hikrivo olot l'elokei Yisrael parim shnei masa. They brought 12 bulls as burnt offerings al kol Yisrael on behalf of the whole of Israel. Elim tishim v'shisha, 96 rams. I'm not sure the significance of the number, but I'm sure it is significant. Shisha kavasim, 6 lambs. Shivim v'shiva. 96 rams, excuse me. And kvasim shivim v'shiva, 77 lambs. Tzipirei chatat, shnei masa, and then 12 sin offerings. And then the Gemara tries to work out all of the different korbanot, that this was not the usual style of korbanot. Things seem to overlap here a bit. Hakol ola lashem, all of it was offered up, literally burnt for the sake of God. And finally, vayidnu et datei hamelech. They had all of these decrees, which we heard about already last week. Lachashdar penei hamelech, they gave it to the officers of the king. This is a word we know from the Megillat Esther. Pachvot evana, and those who were in charge of the cross the river, obviously referring to Israel, which was across the Jordan from the other side. Vinisua ta'am et beit elokim, and they exalted the people and the house of God. Everything became tremendously uplifted. Says Rashi, shahoyu menasim, they helped them as much as they could. So at this point, it is a high point. And of course, what's going to happen, as you see in chapter 9, Ezra is being given almost immediately a very, very devastating piece of news. He's being told that, you remember, he's coming 57 years after the temple project was finished. And of course, his expectation was that not only would the temple be up and running and everything, you know, that he can contribute to make things sort of go even better, but that the people were coming back to what they can only describe as the biblical lifestyle, right? Marrying amongst themselves, etc. And as you'll see, already from the beginning of chapter 9, Ezra's faced with a tremendous dilemma of mixed marriages. What does he do about this? His solution, as I said last week, is so drastic. I'm not even sure if we should even discuss this, but I suppose we have to, because nowadays this would definitely not go down very well in anybody's list of things to do. But there's no question about it, this is something which Ezra has a solution for, but a very dramatic solution. So Mitzvah Shem, next week what we'll see is chapter 9, we'll go through this particular discussion. Very fascinating. To me, today's chapter is really two things. Number one, this wonderful sense of return to Eretz Israel, as limited as it was, you get this feeling of excitement, of elevation, right? That's coming because of it, that they're coming up to Eretz Israel. Once upon a time, you could get off the El Al plane and kiss the ground. All right, nowadays you can't do that anymore because they move you straight. I suppose, you know, you could kiss the inside the terminal, but it's not quite the same. I seem to remember a picture of one of the popes actually kissing the ground when he got off the plane. Used to get down onto the tarmac over there. But again, you know, this is part of what it's about. And not only the sense of connection to Eretz Yisrael, how special it is, but the way that this image of these people sort of, you know, fulfilling their obligation. And again, the story with the Levim, which is very intriguing. One can speculate why they didn't want to go, what exactly was going on. You know, I try to be don the kaf sechud. Certainly according to Midrash, we have to be. But again, my feeling is that Ezra, by making a knas, was showing a kind of, you know, saying to them, you didn't quite turn up when you were supposed to. And the question would be, why not? And it could be, you know, there are other factors involved as well. Life in the Golah, life in the diaspora, sometimes is always very attractive. Is it something that we should take a lesson from? I leave you to make up your mind. I don't want to get too Zionistic at this point. Mitzvah Shem, we'll continue. Chapter 9. As I said, two more weeks, 9 and then 10. And then, please God, after the holidays, we'll start Mitzvah Shem Sefer Nechemiah, which I hope to finish, please God, by the end of the year. I'll leave it at that and wish everybody a good evening.
Thank you very much. We're going to dive in, I guess.
Got a minion.
Good. Thank you.